Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Welcome to the first episode of the new Lost in the Static. Scott has moved on, and we have got a new crew here. We have got myself, Josh Hadley, as always. I'm always here. You can't get. And then we have the intellectual British person, Glenn Riddle. He's a film critic who looks deep for subtleties and analyzes slasher and monster movies.
Yeah, and then now look at Jess Franco films an awful lot.
Well, you know, your skills may be misapplied.
Yeah, quite possibly.
And then we have up-and-coming comic artist Sarah Hanley. Hanley, not Hadley. There's no nepotism here. We spell and pronounce our names differently. Sarah Hanley.
Hey, all the way here from Los Angeles. You can tell by my lack of an English accent.
Picky. And then hopefully starting next week, Dustin Kidd from Canada will be joining us. Certain real world issues got in the way of him coming into this first episode of the new Lost in the Static. But then you guys have listened to Lost in the Static before. Do either of you know what we're about to do here? Adam and Eve promo?
I think we're about to muss this up, aren't we?
Quite possibly.
Go to adamandeve.com. Use the promo code STATIC to get not one, not two, not four, but three free DVDs, 50% off of a single item, a free mystery gift, and free U.S. shipping. Sorry, Glenn. Sorry, Dustin. You guys don't get free shipping. But, Sarah, you would. If you buy something, you get free shipping.
Woohoo!
All for using the promo code STATIC at adamandeve.com. And then there's also go to drivethroughrpg.com and check out Al Seeger's Systemless Settings Bundle. I always have trouble saying this. Systemless Settings Bundle for a systemless setting RPG. Tell them that Josh sent you from Lost in the Static, and you'll get a little discount and a free light bulb joke. That'll make sense when you do it. So, now that I've got you guys here, let's explain to the audience who you are first. Glenn, give the audience a little rundown of what they can expect from your style of Glenn Criddle and the Nasties.
Yeah, as Josh says, I'm kind of into the video nasties. That's where I got into the whole film criticism kind of thing. And I tend to take a more analytical approach to looking at film, television, censorship, all those kind of things. So, I'm not so much the kind of that scene was great, that person's head exploded. I tend to try to work out why that head has exploded and all that kind of stuff.
That head exploding symbolizes his ongoing frustration with the middle class struggle, that kind of thing.
yeah, it's his thoughts going out into the real world in symbolism.
and you know, in all honesty, I like Glenn a lot. I honestly do like his reviews a lot because he does go in depth. In all honesty, and you might take this as a shot, it's not meant as one. Sometimes I think you see symbolism where there isn't any, where it's just an exploitation film, and you're seeing something that's not there sometimes.
Yeah, I've got that comment from a lot of people, you know, and it's possible, but I tend to try to mitigate that personally by looking at the entire film and trying to apply whatever I find to the entire film. So if it does, then it kind of fits.
Like I said, I didn't mean that as an insult. And then Sarah.
No, absolutely not. No.
Yeah.
And then Sarah, tell us a little bit about you. One of the things that attracted me to Sarah was her artwork. When I saw her artwork and the fact that she got this reference right away just endeared her to me. I said it's got a very Kevin Maguire style, and she immediately knew who that was.
Well, that's because I'm not afraid to read things before the time when I started to read comics. We have media out there. It's physical. There's no reason at all people should say, I don't know about that because that's from before I was born. You know what? It still exists. Look it up. Don't be an idiot. But I read comics, I draw, and I write, and I game, and I'm also a girl at the same time. That seems to blow people's minds.
Nerd girl.
Yeah.
And then Dustin we'll get into when he joins the show. But tonight, for our first topic, we are going to look at broadcast signal intrusion. Now, the reason I wanted to look at this, and especially because I have Glenn and Sarah here, is I think we'll get very different perspectives on this. Now, broadcast signal intrusion is something that in America is relatively rare. I mean, in the UK, it's even rarer. But it's basically when the airwaves, which is not necessarily the digital waves now, whatever, get hijacked. And probably the most famous one of these would be the Max Headroom incident from November 22nd, 1987. Now, I was old and I was around. I remember when the Max Headroom incident happened. Glenn, did the news over there cover this at all? Do you remember this besides me sending you all the links and whatnot for the show?
I don't remember it at the time it happened. I think it probably got a little bit of coverage, but not an awful lot. I sort of bumped into it quite some time later, but I mean, before you passed it on to me. I think particularly when the TV series was sort of being re-aired, then it kind of came to light a little bit more. But at the time, it wasn't massive news over here.
Well, and Sarah, you weren't even born yet. When did you first hear about the Max Headroom incident, or was it when I sent it to you?
No, I never saw the actual incident until they started talking about it in the early aughts, which I'm going to stand by that. I think that's an awesome way to describe that decade. But I remember every once in a while that they would show the footage from the local news when they covered it, just because they're like, and we have nothing to show, so let's talk about this again. And then you got to see the awesome 86, was it, the hairstyles and outfits.
1987. Now, for those who are unfamiliar with the Max Headroom incident, it happened in Chicago on November 27th, 1987, technically twice. First, it happened on WGN as they were doing their news. They were doing the local sports cast, the Chicago Bears coverage, and all of a sudden, they lost their signal, and a guy in a Max Headroom mask with a penis on his finger and a corrugated background, I guess to the only way they could low-budget simulate the background of the Max Headroom TV show, broke in, and it was almost only like 37 seconds, they broke into the news. And then a couple of hours later, during the Horror at Fang Rock episode of Doctor Who, the Chicago PBS station was broken into. This time, they were able to get garbled, because their signal clearly wasn't strong enough, but garbled audio into that, which took many pot shots at WGN and whatnot, which lead many to believe this was a targeted attack. Now, you can find the footage of this all over online.
But it's stupid. You should hook up with the old ones of your tribe. That is the only way to learn.
I'll get you a hot drink, then.
Thank you. As far as I can tell, a massive electric shock. He died instantly.
The generator? Are you always so careful?
The thing I find so fascinating about this is the FBI was involved, the FCC was involved, Chicago police were involved. To this day in 2014, no one has been caught or identified who did this. They broke in to two broadcasts in Chicago on the same night, and no one has ever been caught. What does that say, Glenn?
It's rather astounding, really, because, I mean, that you can only imagine the amount of equipment that must have been involved in doing this. It's not something that you're just going to walk along with a walkie-talkie and do. It's and they had a little studio, for God's sake. They were doing it in some kind of substantial fashion. So it's quite amazing that that sort of happened. But the only reason I can think that they got away with it is because there's not necessarily any physical connection between the two. It's not like the internet where you can trace it necessarily. But, I mean, there's been plenty of cases where they sort of found them. It's usually through character generators. They know the people who's got the equipment. But these guys must have been pretty good to get away with it. And I think it adds to the mystery of it as well, which is kind of cool.
Sarah? Yeah, I think it's kind of epic. I mean, these people were able to set it up and break it down. And if they were really smart about it, they got each part from a different place so that they could just scatter it all right back. And if we ever find out about this, it's only going to be by a deathbed confession. It's going to be a deep throat kind of a thing where, oh, yeah, I did this and I'm dead, so you can't prosecute me.
Well, actually, they can't be prosecuted right now anyway. The statute of limitations ran out back in the 1990s and late 90s. So they're actually free from prosecution, which is the strange part here. They are free from all prosecution, but they could go and sell the rights to their story to have a movie made out about this or something. Why has no one come forward? Well, why do you think, keeping the legal angle out, that they're not in any legal trouble anymore? Why would nobody come forward? Because there's been some speculation. Certain people have put together certain anecdotal evidence that were in Chicago at the time that they think they know who did this, but those people won't talk at all. They also, they won't deny it, the people that the other hackers think did it, but they won't confirm it either. Why do you think after all this time they don't want to come forward? They went through all the effort to do this, and even when WGN shuffled them off, they said, you know what, no, we want to do this, let's go after PBS. They were clearly determined. Why do you think they don't want to take credit for it?
I would kind of say that it's possible that they'd sort of taken it from maybe even in a kind of artistic sort of take, that they don't want to blow that mystery. It's quite possible.
You mean kind of like a performance art kind of thing?
Yeah, almost, yeah. Almost. Let's face it, it's much more of an impact, this event, when you don't know who did it, when you have this mystery that goes around it. And, you know, it's quite possible that they actually appreciate that. And that's why they've not come forward, because it would kind of kill the story somewhat if you ever found out who it was.
Yeah, maybe they're just happy with the legend.
Hmm. And it's actually the same. I mean, I'm probably jumping the gun a little bit here, but the Southern television intrusion that I talked to you about, Josh.
Mm-hmm. I actually watched that one. I'm going to get to that one in a little bit. Mm. But why do you think, though, that I guess the way I should put it is, why do you think, though, that this did hit American pop culture so much in the early 2000s, like when Sarah ran across it? This was all over the internet, early YouTube days and all that, and the early, you know, 2006 and whatnot. This was all over. This was almost forgotten by the 1990s. Why do you think the millennials of today latch on to this so much? Because is it because of kind of like the Quentin Tarantino making Reservoir Dogs thing? One of us made it. One of us in the hacking community or you know, one of us nerds did this, and it's sort of a badge of honor, even if you weren't alive when it happened?
I'd say, yeah, to some extent. I mean, the event probably resonated much more with the younger people, who would have been, you know, perhaps too young to have appreciated it at the time. But as they've got older, there's this rather remarkable act of rebellion, really, you know, and it broke into the mainstream culture, which is very, very difficult to do, particularly at that time, you know, and it's kind of like this audio visual graffiti act that went on, which at the time would have been looked at as an act of vandalism. But when people look back at it, there's a certain perhaps nostalgia maybe which has gone on about it.
Sarah, what do you think?
And as you said, there's an obvious solid story structure right here. You have the man, you have WGN, which even though it is, you know, public television, they're pretty damn big, and they have been pretty damn big for a while. You have it relating to geek culture, you have it breaking into Doctor Who, you have them not getting caught. You really have an entire premise and follow through.
I see a Matthew McConaughey movie in this.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, you tell me you couldn't see Matthew McConaughey playing like the lead investigator looking into this in 2 years. I could.
I could probably see him playing the Max Headroom character that was getting spanked.
Well, yeah, we don't know the age of the people who did it, so.
No. Yeah, can the twist be that he's both?
Ah, all right. Now we're getting into Friday the 13th, the series kind of shit there. But then I guess my final question about this one is that with all of this, do you think they kind of wasted their opportunity that they were able to do something that every radical, and I don't mean radical in like a radical Islam or wanting to blow shit up, but any kind of radical information type organization would have died to be able to pull off, and they did it just yelling garbage and humming the theme from Clutch Cargo? Do you think that they kind of wasted their success?
Yes and no. I think the sort of frivolity of it kind of speaks volumes about the people that were doing it to some extent. You know, I mean, you see a lot of these kind of events and the content isn't necessarily, shall we say, intelligent. I kind of look at it as being almost like a Sex Pistols song when you kind of go with this sort of stuff. It's not necessarily full of meaning. Sometimes it's just kind of having fun and sort of being irreverent.
And we also don't know the circumstances behind it. It could be that this was their one shot. It could be that past that weekend, they weren't going to have some of the equipment or some of the people to be able to pull this off. It could have been a one-fer, you know, and that's part of what makes it so awesome and it stays in the public consciousness, is that none of that matters because they were able to accomplish it.
Fair enough. But then, Glenn, you brought up the Southern television broadcast. Obviously, I'm not from England, so I'm unfamiliar with this one. Can you explain this one to us?
Yeah, I mean, this was back in the 70s, and it involved a signal, audio signal, being broadcast over the top of a news report, and it featured the voice of
Vorlon. I think Vorlon is what he called himself.
Vrillion or Asteron.
Great Galactic Empire.
Yeah, that's the one.
This is the voice of Vorlon, We come to rule over the destiny of your race and your world, so that you may communicate to your fellow beings across your state for a violent disaster which threatens your world, and the beings will afterwards allow you. This decision that you will share in a great awakening as the planet passes into a new age of Aquarius. The new age will be a time of greater peace and evolution for your race, but only your rulers are made of your own persons and commandments of your dreams. Be still now, and listen. or your chance may not come again. All your weapons of evil must be removed. The time for conflict is now past, and the race of which you are a part may proceed to the higher stages of its evolution, if you show yourselves worthy to do this. You have but a short time to learn to live together in peace and goodwill.
It was kind of a War of the Worlds sort of thing. There was this whole, you've got to give up your weapons or you'll not be allowed to be part of the galaxy or they're going to get kicked out. And it was actually quite a long message. It was really quite insane. They were on the air for quite a long time. And this was another one that the perpetrators of it, the police had no idea of how the hell they did it, and they still haven't been found. So it's kind of a precursor to the Max Headroom thing in almost every shade, except they had a script.
Well, but that said, do you think they also wasted the opportunity that, you know, especially in England, I know, you know, there's radical groups just like there are in the in America that would love to be able to get out, you know. You don't know how much Alex Jones would love to be able to hijack the airwaves for a minute and a half. and then to waste it on the Galactic Empire. Mm-hmm. Do you think this is just college kids fucking around? Or, you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if, like, some faction within the TV station, some disgruntled union guy, was doing this just to fuck with his bosses, you know?
It would make sense, wouldn't it, really? You know, considering the kind of access that they have. I would imagine it was a lot harder to try and broadcast over a signal than it would be to tap into the signal. But
actually for like the Max Headroom incident, it wasn't. Mm-hmm. One of the things that showed was just how vulnerable it was. All you had to do, you didn't even have to have something that was significantly more powerful. Mm-hmm. You only had to have one little notch more powerful of a signal to lay it over WGN's signal. And that was not difficult to do. I would assume in the 70s it was the same way. You only needed a minimal amount of power. You just had to boost it a little bit more than what they had, and you took it over. In a way, that shows just how vulnerable the airwaves really were.
Oh, absolutely. And there's been cases, because you've got the emergency broadcast system in America, don't you, which we don't actually have over here. And
we just had one of those last year. Somebody broke into one of those and through the emergency broadcast system broadcast a zombie attack alert.
Yes.
Across America.
Which is very, very amusing. I love that, I must
say. Unfortunately, in that case, they were caught pretty quickly. Mm. I don't know if they were sloppy or they have just, the detection equipment is better now than it was in the 70s and 80s. But yeah, they were caught for that one. But that's clearly a joke.
Yeah.
I wonder if they were inspired by that thing that the CDC put out like 2 years ago where they were trying to get people
the zombie attack plan?
Yeah.
Well, okay, now I don't know if this is real or not, but what I have heard from relatively reputable sources is that the U.S. government actually has plans for an alien invasion, zombie outbreak, and whatnot, just in case. They'd rather spend the money to have detailed plans on what to do than have one of these batshit things happen and everyone go, I don't know what to do.
Yeah. That's like obituaries and stuff, because all the news companies keep obituaries of people who they think are going to die in the next few years.
Oh,
and
when
update them every so often.
When I worked in TV news, one of the stations I worked for, this was during the Bush-Kerry election. They actually had stories written for each side, you know, just so they could get right on the air with, you know, John Kerry's our new president, George Bush is our new president. One of those accidentally got posted before the returns were in, and it was for Kerry. When somebody hit the wrong button. So for about 5 minutes, that was on our website.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's what they do for all the Super Bowls, too. They have T-shirts made for Super Bowl champions for both teams. So they can go on sale immediately after the game, and then whichever team lost, therefore making the T-shirt irrelevant, those seriously get shipped over to Africa and get given to poor African kids. So there are poor African kids that have, like, Raven Super Bowl champion T-shirts and shit.
And you know, that counts as part of our foreign aid packages.
Sadly, I'm serious. Yes, seriously, it does. So yeah, I get hedging your bets. I do get that. Mm-hmm. But then...
Yes, you know, but that means that when I get famous and then I die, I want to die in a way where they have to actually write that right there. I'm like, Sarah was hang gliding over the Grand Canyon and then was attacked by a pterodactyl. Come on, you can't have that prepared.
I agree with that. You know, I mean, I want to go out like Bender did. I want to go out robbing a bank and then get hit by a runaway car driven by a coked out Incredible Hulk.
Absolutely.
That's Bender's preferred method of death. But then, now, arguably the most famous broadcast signal intrusion. Now, this is before the Max Headroom incident and after the Southern broadcast incident. And this would be Captain Midnight.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do either of you remember the Captain Midnight incident of 1986?
I remember what you sent me.
Okay, well then you don't actually remember it.
No. Glenn, but it meant I read it.
Well, it was a specifically American thing, so...
Yeah, well, what happened was, there was a time when C-band, those huge giant dishes where you in the 80s, where you could get the Playboy Channel and HBO and all that for free. Well, HBO, Showtime and all that, we're getting pissed off at people with C-band dishes being able to get their signal for free. So they started scrambling their signal, and you had to pay to get a descrambler. Well, a guy who ran a satellite sales outfit, he actually sold the C-band dishes. He saw his sales drop once HBO – because, I mean, think about it. That was the reason you bought a C-band dish, was to get all the pay channels for free. You know, so you pay $1,000 up front and then you get all this shit and you save money in the long run. How dare HBO scramble the signal I was legally stealing from them, right?
Absolutely.
Sons of bitches. So he also had a second job where he would change HBO's satellite transponder. Because what people don't realize is satellites in general are not geosynchronous, which means HBO has multiple satellites, and they have to have someone on the ground changing the satellite as the Earth rotates. They have to go to a different transponder with a different satellite that's over a different part of the country. It's generally seamless. Mm-hmm. Well, what happened was he was able to bump the power up, and in the middle of Falcon and the Snowman, a spy thriller, ironically enough, the spy thriller about a government agent selling secrets, He put on this message for almost 4 minutes of just color bars that said, like, $14.95 a month, HBO? No way. Showtime Movie Channel, watch out. Captain Midnight. And it was just sort of a warning that you better stop scrambling your signal. This made fucking national headlines. I'm sure you guys got it over there, Glenn. I'm sure in the UK they covered it at least, because this was a big deal. Because this was the first big time national, because you got to remember, like, the Max Headroom incident, even though that would be a year later, that was in Chicago. This was nationwide broadcast signal intrusion, the first time that had ever happened. Even taking the Southern incident in the UK into consideration, that was regional. Captain Midnight was national, so this got big attention by the FBI and the FCC.
I see. Yeah, I have to say, I mean, I don't remember anything about it at the time, but I mean, in the 80s, we didn't really have satellite or cable. It was all terrestrial broadcast over here. So I'm not sure how much of an impact it would have made in the news, simply because the format wasn't really known.
I would have thought you guys would
I think it would have been covered a little bit, but.
I would have thought you guys would have at least made fun of us for getting broken into. I mean, you know, weren't you guys still all bitter about that whole us leaving the Empire thing?
Well, that's why they don't let us play in their mini Olympic games.
Yeah, that's right. You got those European only. You guys left Europe. You're not part of this. You can't be. No, sorry.
Yes, but you made Canada, your choice. Canada gets to play in them.
Yeah, the Commonwealth Games. You kicked the Queen out, so, you know, you kind of sort of went, no, I don't want to be part of the Commonwealth. Mind you, most of the Commonwealth doesn't want to be part of the Commonwealth these days.
Hell, Scotland almost didn't.
No.
Yeah, I think that they need to check the counts on that.
The sun never sets on the British Empire, which does keep getting smaller, though.
It gets smaller, but the sun's still there. If nothing else, the newspaper.
I was. Damn it! You beat me to it. I was going to make a joke about the paper. Beat me to it.
That's
but
page
then,
three.
With the Captain Midnight incident, he was caught relatively quickly in about 2 weeks, mm-hmm. Only because he made one minor fatal mistake. The character generator he used was relatively rare, and they were able to track the character generator back to him. And he broke pretty quick. Basically, when the FBI walked into his store, he wasn't a suspect yet. I mean, they were looking at somebody in his area, but he wasn't a specific suspect yet. When the FBI walked into his store, he basically knew it was up and gave it up. So maybe he could have held out, maybe he could have not been caught. I think that is actually, that says something right there that he was able to get away with it for 2 weeks, though. Doesn't it?
Yeah, and I know that you said that for the WGN incident, there were some people who weren't that interested in looking into it.
Yeah.
With this one, it was all across the country. So how much resources did they put into that?
Probably a lot. And you know what? I obviously, at that point, I'm 11 years old, so Falcon and the Snowman, you know, a spy thriller, not my thing, unless, you know, one of the spies is an alien. But I do remember my mom was watching that night, because I remember her telling me about it the next day. So in a way, I do remember the Captain Midnight incident right from the get-go. But then, do you guys know anything about the UVB-76 Russian incident, which is technically not broadcast signal intrusion, but I'm going to include it anyway? Basically, for the last 20 years, this signal, which according to Cracked, sounds not unlike the sound of a truck horn played through a cheese grater, and I've listened to the signal, that's a pretty valid description, honestly. Just is sitting there in the background on some unused stations. It's only been interrupted 3 times in its entire history, and it's based out of Russia.
That doesn't sound suspicious.
I guess the point is, this is somebody doing this. You can occasionally hear conversations in the background, although they're all muddled and whatnot. You can occasionally hear differences in the pitches. So this isn't some recording that's just going out. This is some live mic that is broadcasting for 20 years random noise. What's
Can you imagine being their neighbors?
let's get into this. What's the point? There has to be some point to this, doesn't there?
I'd imagine there has to be some Foley artist who is going through all the different combinations of ways you can make sound to try to find what kind of device is making that noise.
Well, I mean, there's speculation about could it be coded for military operations or spying operations and all that kind of stuff. And considering the vintage of it, I guess you could. That's actually quite plausible. You know, it's not trying to hide. It doesn't necessarily need to. It just needs to be mysterious enough. It could just be a long-running prank, because it's not really difficult to sustain something like that, really. You know,
yeah,
you just kind of muddle around on in front of the microphone, and the rest of the time you're transmitting noise. So,
yeah, I don't know. It just seems pointless to me, though. I mean, I'm sure, like I said, I'm sure there is a reason. Mm. It just seems pointless to have all this technology and reach and not do anything with it.
Well, it could have been a bluff. It could have been a signal that was sent out so that our services went, oh my God, this is a code, we need to break it. And if it was just noise, if it was just tones, then that could be them just trying to get their enemy to spend money. And we need so much encouragement to do that, don't we? But, I mean, the question is, if you have something like that in place, even if it doesn't cost that much, how do you sustain the funding for that?
Well, perhaps this is Virilon of the Galactic Empire moving to Russia. I mean, he clearly didn't make much headway in the UK.
And that was so New Age 70s. That was amazing.
It scared a load of old ladies.
Which, you know, from the few British old ladies I've actually met, is not that hard. The women in your country, the old timers seem to be kind of skittish. I'm sure coming from World War II, that's justified, though, you know?
Well, you never met my gran.
She's one of those people that would kill a bear with a pen, huh?
Oh, absolutely. On my stepdad's side, she was just rock solid. We went to stay for over a Christmas holiday, and it was freezing in her place, and she was fine. We were like, kind of, I can't take that.
Yeah, and
absolutely,
Glenn,
rock solid her generation.
Glenn, don't take offense at this, but when I was listening to that broadcast, I was like, you know, anytime I hear an alien with a British accent, I think of Doctor Who. I just can't not at this point.
See, that's one of the clues, wasn't it, when they did that particular broadcast?
Yeah, they didn't even try to...
The aliens had a very, very good British accent.
What they should have done is gotten a Yank to do it. You know, a Yank accent to be Virilon. Now that would have fucked people up in 77.
It would have been funny if it was a Welsh accent.
Yes, but then we wouldn't be able to understand it. We'd have a Max Headroom incident again.
Well, okay, how about hardcore porn going out over family broadcasting? Now, mm-hmm. This one isn't broad. Both of the next two I'm going to bring up aren't broadcast signal intrusion so much as operator fuck up. There's a Christian TV show, a kid's show called Handy Manny. It's like a Dora the Explorer knockoff.
And that doesn't sound like the porn version of itself already.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it turned out that this was being broadcast over Comcast. The Comcast operator was watching some hardcore porn and hit the wrong button and for a couple of minutes broadcast the hardcore porn during Handy Manny. Now, I've worked in master control before. A lot of times you're watching something other than what's on the air, and it is literally only a button press away to put that on the air. That's operator error. So it's not necessarily broadcast signal intrusion. Same thing with the Tucson Arizona Super Bowl in 2009 when accidental hardcore pornography was broadcast.
Accidental pornography.
Accidental pornography. You know what? Accidental pornography shouldn't be a thing, but it is.
I think it should be a band name.
Yeah. Honestly, accidental pornography is a great band name, now that you mention it. Yeah.
It's in the spirit of a children's show. You share what you like with other people.
Before we end broadcast signal intrusion, this one doesn't technically qualify. But we're going to be talking about Virilon a little bit here, kind of. Do you guys know the 6EQUJ5 incident?
I think I have a cross. Bingo.
Well, essentially what this was is they had the Big Ear radio telescope, which is looking for signals from space. They got a radio signal from an empty spot in space, where there are no galaxies and there are no planets and no solar systems. For 37 seconds, a radio signal identified as 6EQUJ5 came from this empty area of space. That's not broadcast signal intrusion, but holy crap, that is awesome, isn't it?
That's totally awesome.
And the fact that, keep in mind, this is an empty area of space, which means only a spacecraft could send this. Now, to be fair, probably not. Most likely this was a radio signal we had sent out, you know, 40, 50 years ago that was hitting something reflective, like an asteroid or a meteorite, and reflecting back to us. Where do you fall on this, Glenn? Spaceship or random reflected radio signal.
Having not heard the actual recording, it's a little hard to say, but one of the things which is quite common is they find signals which do sound like something recognizable. And that's kind of spooky when they do like the sounds of Jupiter or something like that. And not necessarily radio signals in the same way that we kind of think of them, but something very similar, which you can sort of bounce down to sound level if you like.
Look, I'm not saying it's aliens.
No. But...
Listen, I'm not saying it's truck or CB radio from space, but it's truck or CB radio from space.
Have you guys never seen the beginning of Contact?
Yes.
Robert Kennedy was shot in that ball.
And we continue the season's final edition of our Maxwell House Good News 1930.
Yes, that's as far as I could get.
Seriously, it's a fantastic movie.
Well, there were circumstances.
All right, I thought you were bitching about the movie. I'm like, that's a fantastic film. But, so, why do you think, as we round out this first episode of the new Static, why do you think that this doesn't happen as often? Obviously, now in the digital age, it's much more difficult to do this. You basically have to do, like, the Comcast porn stuff, where it's operator error, and it's less broadcast signal intrusion, and more, I hit the wrong fucking button. But, you know, you look at movies like Johnny Mnemonic, you've got the... You know, you've got Snatch Back Your Brain, Zombies. And
Snatch Back Your Brain, Zombie. Snatch it back and hold it.
In the TV series Dark Angel, you've got the eyes, the open eyes broadcasts and stuff like that. Why do you think this didn't happen more often before the switch to digital? Do you think it was the difficulty involved? Or that nobody really had anything interesting to do with this, like the Max Headroom incident or whatnot, or just some college kids fucking around. Glenn?
I think it's technical. It took a certain amount of knowledge and effort and expense to actually do these things. It wasn't exactly a free thing. You know, and generally speaking, the people that did it, I suspect you will find were either enthusiasts or industry professionals. So your average person just didn't have the access to do it, I don't think. So that's probably why it didn't happen so often.
Sarah?
I think that you need a combination of people who have the technical know-how and imagination. And there are imaginative engineers out there, but there are many who are lovely, very dry individuals. And and you need that sweet spot in the middle. And unless you had someone who was enthusiastic and maybe, let's say, dating them to encourage them, you're just not going to get that.
I think it has to do more with, and I agree with both of you, but more with the equipment. The equipment required for this was not cheap. I mean, even at the cheapest, they were estimating for the Max Headroom incident that the cheapest equipment they could have done this on in 1987 dollars would have been $10,000 worth of equipment. That's still a lot of money to pull off between the two broadcasts, approximately 2 minutes of a performance art, isn't it? That's a lot of investment.
Yeah, even if you're renting that, which would lower the price somewhat, it's
still a lot.
And also
make it much
lot.
Easier to catch you, too.
Yeah.
Because rental would be stupid. You know, these people were not stupid. Rental would have been stupid for them.
Which is kind of why I say it's probably, you know, either industry insiders or enthusiasts, because they're the only people that would have that kind of equipment, really, mm-hmm. when you think about it.
And a lot of this stuff is a lot more technical than you'd think. This isn't just aiming your dish at their dish and hitting a button. There's a lot of things. I worked with a lot of the engineers at various TV stations. There's a lot more going on behind the scenes than just hooking this up to this and then the piece of equipment does this. No. There's a lot going on, guys. So do you think broadcast signal intrusion, let's say in the digital era, let's say you could break in with the same relative ease of Captain Midnight or the Max Headroom incident, do you think that there's a place for it today? Or with the internet, there's really no place to break into television? Glenn?
I think it's actually probably more likely these days because it's we're all equipped with computers. There's plenty of hackers out there. So, you know, why wouldn't anyone kind of get onto, I don't know, Netflix or something like that and put their own stuff in there. I think it's a lot easier to do nowadays than it ever has been, probably. And I'd be surprised if we don't see activists of one kind or another actually doing it. And I kind of look forward to it to some extent.
What do you think, Sarah?
I think that you could either go relatively old school and find something that people watch when it's being aired, which isn't the easiest thing to do. But if you found the way to break into HBO as they're playing Game of Thrones, or if you could break into BBC as they're playing Doctor Who and you could get it there, but it's more likely that they're going to go and hit a lot of different things with a tiny little message so that it becomes viral in its own sense.
So do you think then that computer hacking has sort of took over for broadcast signal intrusion?
Unfortunately.
All right, fair enough. All right, as we round out this first episode of the new static, Glenn, if people wish to watch you're on S3 now, you're on the S3 reviews, but if they want to watch your nasty reviews or catch up with you, where can they do so?
I'm on Geek Juice Media. You can find me there, and you can find a catalog of my stuff on YouTube as LampyMan101.
And Sarah, where can people contact you if they want to see your art? There will be some of your art going up on 1201beyond.com soon. It's just not there as the date we're recording this. But if people want to see your stuff or contact you, where can they find you?
They can find me on Anna McKeon at DeviantArt, annamckeon.deviantart.com. I hope to have a contact on 1201, and hopefully they like my stuff enough to do that.
Like I said, her style is very Kevin Maguire. And if you know who that is, congratulations.
Yay, you win a no prize.
Help people know what a no prize is.
Okay, you win a double no prize.
And you can find me, 1201beyond.com, and you can contact the show at 1201beyond@gmail.com. And we'll get this nailed down. You know, the new show, it's going to have a few bumps. Like, you know, Glenn cut out a couple of times in this. Nothing I can do about that. We're getting him from another country. Give him some slack.
Basically another dimension.
Well, yes. I mean, well, we are time traveling right now, because for him, it's like late night, early morning. Sarah and I, it's like early evening.
It's
so
Thursday,
we are time traveling. It's tomorrow for you, isn't it, Glenn?
Mm-hmm. It is. It's Thursday.
See? So
happy
holy
Thursday.
Crap. So you guys have a good night, and let us know what you think of the new static.
Relax. You're quite safe here.
Am I dreaming?
No.
Where am I? In bed? What am I doing? talking to myself. Look, I must have a star on my door.
Or better still.
The door. Swing doors, huh? Look, okay, doors. Swing. On the window. One, two, three, sleep. Poetry. That'll work. Come, sweet slumber, and shroud me in thy purple cloak. Doesn't even rhyme. Is that my tease name?
Paranoid.
I can't stand tease.
Lost in the Static is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.